Way, way back in the 1980s, secret government employees dug up famous guys and ladies and made them using genetic copies. Now they're clones of sexy teens. Now they're gonna make it if they try. Loving, learning, sharing, judging. Time to laugh and shiver and cry.
Today, on a very special Little Shows That Couldn't, ADD and movies collide.
Ooh, that sounds intense.
Yeah, so welcome to Little Shows That Couldn't. I'm your host, Brett Medill. With me, as always, co-host Sean Stewart.
Hello, everybody.
And part you two. Know, and you know by that music, yes, it's part two of Clone High. Episode threes and fours. The first one, what's episode three called, Sean?
Episode three is called ADD : The Last D is for Disorder.
You know, I really prefer titles that have subtitles.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need to. I mean, it's incredibly unnecessary to make it super long, but they just take it in strides and just, like, let's make it more than four words and then add some more words on top of that.
I'm just a big fan. I'm a big fan of subtitles. I like not subtitles that you have to read, I'll tell you.
You know what?
I've learned English, am I right? But I feel
bad that we didn't do this with Clerks the Animated Series, because all of those episode titles were ridiculous too.
Yeah.
Like, they were like full on like two sentences.
Yeah.
But that's the past. We're living
progress.
In the past now.
Clone High, it's great stuff. Yeah, subtitles.
So Gandhi is super hyper, just too much. He's too much right now.
I mean, this episode
he's more hyper than he usually is.
But it's just, it results in a lot of amazing, like, physical comedy in this cartoon.
It does.
He's just, Gandhi, his hyperactivity leads him to be the cartooniest of the characters on this cartoon. And just, like, lots of physical comedy, and it's great. But
showing,
yeah,
in
this
in
episode
nose.
Is all about Gandhi wrestling with being diagnosed with attention deficit disorder and dealing with that.
And good
while,
time, too.
Yeah, while Abe... Cleo and JFK break up, and, you know, Cleo distracts Abe. Abe starts choosing Cleo over Gandhi. Gandhi starts feeling really isolated and really alone. But in the end, Abe steps up for him, and friendship prevails. This episode's pretty great. We were talking about the cartoony, good physical comedy from Gandhi. I really love him when he's, like, grabbing his butt in the dance thing, and he's just, like,
and just
dropping it like it's hot.
Shoving things up his nose.
Shoving, yeah. All,
the things.
It definitely establishes that the relationship between Abe and Gandhi has been based on Gandhi entertaining Abe in various situations through the ages, and chiefly by entertaining him by sticking things in his nose.
By shoving everything up his nose. Soaps,
Gandhi's
sandals, whatever.
Starfish. Gandhi's got some standard moves that he goes to, I think.
His standard Abe
say.
Cracking moves.
Yeah, shove the Torah up your nose.
Just anything up
French
your nose.
French fries, whatever you got.
French fries.
He does some great impressions.
Hey, I'm the guy with two French fries in my nose.
He does some great impressions.
It's a good one. It's a really
great
good
impressions.
One.
And, and then there's the awareness fairs happening as well.
Yep.
Right?
This year's theme is awareness, which is a pretty good theme for awareness awareness fair. I feel like they weren't very... I mean, they were aware of Gandhi's ADD, but they didn't feel very... very respectful of it. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't take efforts to make Gandhi feel like a normal person. They just kind of...
No, they ostracize him immediately.
They outcast him so quickly.
They throw him all casty. They toss him under the bus. He's got a little ADD, and it's like, oh, well, we're not sure if you can dance. What if you get an ADD attack?
Huh? That's ridiculous. Like, what if
they start
were just aware
him?
Of, like, I don't know.
They start treating him like he's a filthy epileptic. You heard me, epileptics. Get with the program.
Whoa, epileptics. Come on, let's do this.
Anyway, yeah, no, they make a point of making this satirical point of a person with ADD being rejected and...
A social reject.
Yeah, the same way we're making the joke about someone with epilepsy being rejected. That's silly. It wouldn't be done.
Exactly.
But it happens to Gandhi, and...
Poor Gandhi is, ostracized. And
they have like the big town hall meeting where everyone's there and to discuss his diabetes. I mean, his diabetes.
His diabetes.
His ADD. No, it's because one of JFK's gay dads yells out, "Lock him up like a diabetic."
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. And we even get to see Joan of Arc's foster father, Toots.
Yeah, Toots makes his first appearance, played by Donald Faison.
Unfortunately, he wasn't there for the meeting, but
he speaks up like he's there to speak up for Gandhi and like have his like because what it needs to be said, he's blind and he's black and he's kind of a magical Negro character.
A little bit, I suppose.
So, as such, when he speaks up in this moment, everything is built so that it looks. Everything is built for him to speak up for
it's
Gandhi.
It's like a "Hey, shut up and listen to this guy"
yeah,
moment.
Exactly, and he announces that that he was not there for this meeting, and he was actually intending to go to a restaurant, and
I'll just find my way out.
And he'll just quietly leave now. Like it's and great. Then, yeah. It's great. So Gandhi doesn't get any support.
Nope, Gandhi is cast out.
Just gets pooped on.
And Abe decides he's going to learn more about ADD instead of hanging out with Cleo all the time and runs into Tom Green.
Tom Green.
Who's the poster child for ADD, apparently.
I honestly, I laughed. We rewatched this and I laughed so hard
when Tom Green
came back on. And I don't, like, is it just nostalgia, Sean? Or is that really that funny?
It's
like,
pretty funny. I don't know. I thought it was really funny. But I'm also a man-child, as has been established in the past.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess the thing is that I think of myself as someone who writes comedy, and like the stuff that Tom Green does, it comes across as though it's not written at all. It all comes across very just like stream of consciousness weirdness.
Very improvised.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. And so he just, but when he does it, and I laugh, but it's at the same time, maybe it's just because I don't do it that way, but it's just like, I feel almost bad for laughing. Like, how is this? Like, is this actually funny? Oh my God. Like, but
it's
funny. It is. I'm laughing. Like, I can't deny that it's funny, but it's just.
It makes you question why you're laughing.
Oh, yeah, exactly. While you're laughing, it's almost like you feel. It's so stupid that you almost feel bad for laughing, even though it's obviously entertaining. I don't know.
I suppose.
Good old Tom Green.
I've got Tom Green.
Yeah, like I've got.
And
some
even nowadays,
of
like
watching his show.
Yeah, he has his internet show. I think he still has it, but
I just used to watch him when he was on Comedy Network, and then when he was on.
Oh,
was
yeah.
It, was he on H? Was it HBO that he was on?
No.
That he had the show when he was had the. It wasn't HBO. It was
MTV.
MTV when he was on Times Square there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. I just remember my favorite Tom Green bit that I remember was when he announces that he's going to start and that he puts up Glenn's phone number. He just has all these cards. He just has all these cards flipped over and he's like, I'm going to reveal. And Glenn's not in studio. He's like back home in Ottawa or something. Like he's got another job, right? So he's just there via like a TV monitor. And he's like, Glenn, every week that you're not here, Glenn, I'm going to reveal one more digit from your home phone number. And, but what he did was all the backs of all those cards were facing the windows into Times Square. So that if you watched the show that one week, you could deduce and then saw outside, you could deduce what Glenn's number was. And I guess he just got flooded with voicemails and stuff, right? So I just remember
that's
that.
That's funny.
But that's the kind of thing that doesn't even happen, that couldn't happen now. But it's just funny.
God, no.
Like, that wouldn't be funny to do now as a bit. But it was then, man. It was super funny.
Early 2000s were a weird time.
And we just start really digging into JFK's voice. Like, whenever it's gotten to the point now, I know that for my JFK impression that I do is just an impression of impression,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, whenever I'm thinking of doing a JFK, I'm just trying to do
the
this
JFK from Clone High.
Right? Like, I don't know if
I don't know if it even sounds like the actual JFK.
Right.
It might not at all.
I don't know if I have any impressions that are even original. They're all just, like, trying to do somebody else's version of the impression.
Exactly.
But I know that I like to do this JFK.
It's a pretty good voice to do.
Yeah, I don't dig into it quite as much as the cartoon version.
No, but why would you? I mean, are we getting paid to do this voice? You know? Come on.
The best part of Aura waking up is Folgers Aura in your cup.
Yeah. Bringing back some advertisement,
love it.
JFK.
I love it. I love doing advertisements with the JFK voice. It's so good. And then when he starts getting emotional, right, over Cleo. And
he does.
He starts
hanging out with Scudworth.
He goes to Scudworth I guess we kind of glossed over the B story really is that Scudworth uses... He decides that Mr. B's cardigan sweater is magical, and he starts to wear it, and he gains... It's not magical.
He gets attention
It just gives him confidence.
I suppose.
To solve problems, but he decides it's magical. So Mr. B ends up walking around with, like, a stained wife beater on. And,
so funny.
I'm sorry, a stained A shirt...
sleeveless shirt?
What's the undershirt? You know, a sleeveless undershirt.
An undershirt.
He's wearing a sleeveless undershirt with stains on it. And he has chest hair, like, carved into his metal body. It's so ridiculous.
So funny.
Just the lengths
they go to like, well, he has nothing under the sweater. Well, what if he had, like, I don't know, a stained shirt or whatever?
Yeah, it's just a great joke.
That's funny.
So Scudworth is trying to use the sweater to gain more connection with the people, which he does successfully, but then he doesn't really want to be he doesn't want to be exposed to their feelings and emotions, really.
No,
so that when,
because
so
that's dumb.
Yeah, so when JFK comes to him over Cleo, Cinnamon just throws him into a pit, hits the switch, tosses
him. You're in the pit.
And then you get the It's great. Great jokes. Great jokes. I like jokes.
We also get kind of a C story with Joan of Arc. Mm. She starts to hear voices.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of things going
on. And she thinks, finally hearing voices.
Religious
Maybe
voices.
Maybe the clone is becoming the master? How does that work?
Or that she wants to live up to my delusional forebear.
So she does.
So she thinks she is, but it's all just radio signals coming in on her retainer.
Yep.
Classic old bit. And what was Scudsworth's advice about lemons?
If you have lemons, you clone those lemons.
And then you have super lemons.
Which is good advice. I mean, yeah, when life gives you lemons, clone
them. You know, I think that's the kind of way I want every character to express themselves, like in every show of all time.
For sure.
The way that I want a character to express themselves to me, the way that I am most going to understand where a character is coming from, is if they have an analogy about what to do with lemons. You know,
totally.
I feel like that is the most revealing thing to have from a character. You know, on the Brack show, Thundercles told us, of course, that when the world gives you lemons, you should blow those lemons to bits with your laser cannons.
Right.
And that tells you what you need to know about that character. And this tells you what you need to know about Cinnamon. So I think that this is an analogy that all characters should make to tell me about themselves. Sean, do you have an analogy about lemons that shows your character?
That shows my character?
Yeah, what do you do with lemons, Sean? When the world gives you lemons...
When the world gives me lemons, I would just eat them. Probably. It's pretty... I mean, that's what I do.
That's kind of... I don't know, man. That song's almost sad. It's like, hey, if the world forces you to eat a tub of disgusting garbage... You grab the biggest spoon you have available, and you tuck
you
into
your
the...
bib on, and you just hammer it down.
If you just get faced with a tub of fish skeletons and garbage, you grab the biggest ladle you've got, and you start shoveling that garbage down.
And you thank your father for that. And you thank your founding fathers for that.
And you thank your two gay dads for the tub of garbage that you got to eat.
And for the accent that we're using right now.
I don't know, that's what you do when you eat garbage. It's probably how you would sound.
After a while, I mean, sure, there's going to be a broken glass eventually.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
Christian music in Joan's mix. What's in your mix, Sean? What's in the mix?
What's in my mix? Well, let's see. There's rock and roll. There's electronic music.
You listen to a lot of trap R&D. Still.
Still listening to a lot of trap.
Still a trap guy.
My dubstep and all that garbage.
Still living in a world without lyrics.
No. Recently, I've been listening to. I've been catching up on my Rack albums. My Rack albums.
I don't even know what that means.
My Rack. Rack and roll.
Is that Iraq? You listen to Iraq?
Yeah,
music?
I'm listening to Rack music. It's very high volume stuff.
RAQ Rack.
Yep.
Okay.
Very high volume.
Wow, this sounds
can
interesting.
Can be bouncy sometimes, you know.
What's one of your rack bands that you listen to lately, Sean?
Double T's Nuts.
Double T's Nuts.
Yep.
Is that real?
Yeah, it's real. Check it out.
I don't even know. Wow. I'm going to check that out.
Do it.
I think everyone should. We should
Rack,
see,
R-A-Q.
See what
kind of good
Sean,
stuff.
Sean Music Rack is going on. And then so
Abe steps up for Gandhi at the end. When they get
finally.
To the, they're at the open mouth kissing booth. And
nobody will kiss Gandhi. Well, Cleo won't kiss Gandhi.
And Abe has an opportunity where he could be spending this time with Cleo.
Yep.
Perhaps open mouth kissing. Or maybe just being manipulated into open mouth kissing other girls.
It's possible.
But he gives up that opportunity to step up for his friend, for Gandhi. He goes and open mouth kisses Gandhi. So like
yep.
Abe steps up, he's like, I'll be ostracized instead of my friend.
But
and,
not for being weird
like,
or anything.
This show, it's just got such a... It's just so funny that it's like, he takes the heat by like, oh, no, it's okay to be homophobic. Like, that's the stance that the show,
yeah.
like, the like it's obviously it's a joke, but it's like
right.
they take the stance that, oh, okay, well, we can accept Gandhi and his ADD now because
we
have
can't.
A new thing
yeah.
to hate. And we hate this guy and his gayness.
Wonderful.
Which is, yeah, it's exactly, it's really funny.
Yeah,
but friendship fun. Prevails, so that's
and
good.
Friendship prevails, and the solid Gandhi dancers dance us out.
Yeah, absolutely, the way it should be
and
done.
Everybody wins.
Conspicuously missing from episode 3, a dolphin.
A dolphin.
It
we
seems like
one.
We did a little research, and it seems like the first episode and the third episode might be without dolphins.
No dolphin.
But
no
I
dolphin
think
scene.
I think we're gonna find. I'm gonna be on dolphin watch patrol.
Okay, that sounds good.
For every episode henceforth. And I'm pretty sure these guys have used dolphins in, like, all their other stuff.
Well, weren't the Miami Dolphins in one of the Jump Street movies?
I hope
or,
so.
Or something?
Man,
I don't know.
That would be great. Or at least,
I remember
at least
something.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. So then episode 4. Episode 4 is a film fest. What's the title?
We got for the title, Film Fest, : Tears of a Clone.
Tears of a Clone.
Tears
yes.
of a clone.
An emotional episode where...
Pretty emotional.
I mean,
a lot of emotions get caught on film.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about a film fest, but what happens to cause this film fest is there's a cross-country competition, and Abe does well. Or no, Abe actually gets a stinger.
Abe does well,
he gets
but
a stinger
he
at the end
up,
and doesn't place.
But JFK does well.
JFK does really well. And to celebrate the success of this cross-country competition.
To show their passion.
They riot and destroy half the school.
And, yeah.
I mean, what happens in this riot? It was a really funny riot.
The cheerleaders make a human pyramid and start breaking through windows and looting.
Yeah, cheerleaders are getting thrown through windows.
We have JFK breaking into a window pane store and using it to break a brick wall.
Yeah, JFK breaks a brick wall with a window pane. What else happened in there, Sean? There was some great stuff.
There was one with Gandhi as well, I think. I can't remember
now.
No,
I don't remember either. Well, you know what this episode really kind of brought home for me was that I think I used to watch this show more as Abe and Gandhi.
Right.
I think that was where my attention was more on them before. But now when I watch it, I'm like, Joan's the character that speaks for me.
Yeah,
I'm Joan now. So maybe that's why I like this show is that maybe, and then maybe I'll
this
get
this episode
like,
in particular, maybe?
Or maybe it's this episode, or maybe like in 5 years from now, I'll watch Clone High again and I'll be like, yeah, I'm really more of a Butlertron.
Yeah,
you know?
Or Mr. Peanut. You never know.
You know, this is the show that keeps on giving. You can identify with different characters within different stages of your life.
Absolutely.
Clone High
still,
forever.
I still feel like I relate to, like, I still feel pretty familiar with Gandhi.
You're a Gandhi kind of guy.
Possibly.
Yeah, because you have such hard ADD.
Yeah, I think I do. I think I might.
Yeah, you're pretty,
but who
pretty
knows?
ADD'd right out. If Tom Green would only come and talk to you, everything would be better.
Yeah, Tom Green, talk to us.
So this riot results in the school's destruction. And, you know, everyone
and
has a lot of feelings that they need to express
right.
about the school's destruction. So in order to process those feelings, they decide to allow students to make films that they can express themselves with and work
Finally.
Through those emotions,
Finally.
Those stages of grief.
And
we can all reach some acceptance.
Emotions are had, I'd say.
It's an emotional... Clone High is an emotional cartoon.
It is. It's pretty emotional.
I mean,
like, aside from all the hilarious stuff, they get down to some pretty pretty deep issues.
Yeah, I mean, characters' pupils dilate, their hands get raised,
yeah.
palms up to the sky. It's emotional.
It is.
I know whenever I'm emotional, I raise my hands to the sky.
Yeah. I only assume my eyes widen.
Why, God?
Why did you?
Why have I been saddled with this subpar McDonald's cheeseburger?
Why can't a giraffe play football?
I get really emotional over things. Why do I have to be subjected to a sliver?
Yeah.
You know?
And what's the deal with static electricity? Why does it always have to happen to me?
I get really emotional when I take a shock. I tell you what.
I hate it.
I don't believe in socks anymore. As a result, I think what we need to learn here. So they have a film festival. All the different clones make films that are express themselves. And also, Scudworth's B story is that he has to have dinner with the Board of Shadowy Figures next Friday at his house. Except we don't actually get to, like, that's like a standard thing, like a Seymour and the Superintendent kind of a situation. Except we don't actually get to see any of it. We just see how it ends.
Yeah.
So that's kind of funny.
Which is, I mean, what could they have done in that scenario anyway?
I know, but it's funny because they set that up as part of the plot, and then they just kind of gloss over it and fast forward that right to the end. And
which
I like that.
I think
it's
works
funny.
Out for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, it's a really, like, this show has a lot of fun with, like, when I say it's meta, really, like, it has a lot of fun with the different kinds of tropes of cartoons and television.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. I really like it. Yeah, exactly. It's metatextual. It's great. And so the different students
come up with different films.
Yeah. Gandhi wants to express his feelings with a Rush Hour style film. Can you think of any other like films that are like Black and Tan? There's Rush Hour and the Rush Hour movies. I mean, there's lots of buddy cop films.
Yeah, I was going to say but like Tango and Cash, but that's more of a buddy cop film than
48 Hours. That's not buddy cops. I mean, because Eddie Murphy's a criminal in that movie.
That's true.
48 Hours is one of my favorite buddy movies. Well,
Adam
Sandler
and Damon Wayans.
To be fair, that's
not a buddy cop.
Bulletproof isn't even the best version of that movie. The best version of that movie is called Midnight Run, and it had Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin. And Charles Grodin played like a mob accountant that was turning state's evidence, and Robert De Niro is a bail bondsman that has to escort him across the country because he won't fly.
I see.
And Bulletproof, I think Adam Sandler is playing like a mob informant, right? Like he's similar sort of setup,
so.
Like he's informing.
I
think Damon Wayans is a cop or something.
But he couldn't fly because of the bullet in his head.
But yeah, it's the same setup is that we get this cop type character and a criminal type character, and they have to drive across the country.
Driving across the country.
And yeah, Black and Tan. So Black and Tan's more of like a Miami Vice type buddy cop situational type thing.
With George Washington Carver.
More like a Shanghai Noon Rush Hour situation.
There we go. Noon. We found another one.
They both had Jackie Chan.
Thank goodness.
They're both Jackie Chan.
They're both Jackie Chan movies.
So we get Black and Tan, where Gandhi partners up with George Washington Carver and, of course, Peanut.
And the Mr. Peanut.
And JFK doesn't really make a film. He just kind of holds auditions for a film.
Yeah, he just makes out with women and whatever.
And plus more,
and
perhaps.
Other stuff.
He gets pretty far with Catherine the So-So.
Yeah. What did his movie consist of? Just women dancing?
I don't know if he actually made a
movie.
Did he submit one?
But... Or maybe he didn't. I don't know.
I kind of think he just held auditions the entire time. I think that's funnier.
Yeah.
Joan makes an art film. She casts Genghis Khan as Gabe Lincoln.
Yep.
Where she's expressing her feelings. Wonder what they could possibly be.
Who knows? Well, then, nobody knows, really.
Yeah, because she...
Except Sigmund Freud, of course.
And Abe makes a movie called It Takes a Hero, which features a giraffe playing football. We'll get into kind of better descriptions of some of these movies as we progress here. I mean, we may as well just, I guess, dig right
might
in.
Might as well.
Yeah, may as well. I guess, Joan's art film about Gabe Lincoln is impenetrable to the audience. Like, no one understands it.
Nobody except for
the clone of Sigmund Freud, who says that, who declares it extremely obvious that Joan loves Abe.
Clearly.
And I mean, and when I watch it, when I know that that's what she's trying to express, I can't pick it up. Can't do it.
No idea.
It just comes across as a hilarious parody of an experimental film.
And we get the dolphin.
Dolphin watch. The dolphin was in Joan's film.
Yeah.
And
as Genghis Khan's tears. Sorry, Gabe Lincoln's tears.
Yeah. And yeah, so, and then Abe's film, It Takes a Hero, in which an alien giraffe plays football victoriously has sex with a girl and then returns to the stars.
Because it's in his emotions. That's those are Abe's emotions.
It's the story of Abe Lincoln. Obviously, it's Abe's emotions here.
He's just a giraffe playing football most of the time.
Yeah. And then, of course, right after that, like, we only get to see Black and Tan, Jones Film, or we get to see Black and Tan and It Takes a Hero. Then there's a fire because of because Thomas Jefferson is using a coal-powered projector.
Like you do.
Yeah, like you would if you were Thomas Jefferson, I guess.
In the early 2000s.
Yeah. Sure, why not? Who knows what's going to happen in Cinnamon J. Scudworth's school. Well, you see, the original projector was destroyed in the riot, so they had to use an old coal-powered one.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, sure, why not?
It's the backup projector.
And, but of course, there's a fire, and Jones Film doesn't just survive, but is somehow largened and enhanced.
Yeah. There's more to it now.
And so,
in double HD.
So though, even though she is worried that it's going to expose her, no one but Siggy
understands.
So she gets away.
So it all works out.
Yeah, it works out pretty well.
And the
her.
Film festival ends in another riot.
Yeah, like
to school spirit or whatever.
Well, exactly.
Who
like
cares?
What historical figure would you like to see make a film?
That's a good question.
I'll let you think about that
for a second. I'll go with Gregor Mendel. I've always thought his work was really
Let's cast
really fun.
This. Let's figure out the Gregor Mendel tale for Sean. So you're into like monks who are botanists
super into peas.
That are botanists and discover genetics.
I just thought it was interesting his take on how he came about with that theory of genetics and all
that.
So
what
stuff.
Kind of film would the
be boring as hell.
What kind of film would the researcher who discovered modern heredity make? Is it just a movie about peas growing? Just a bunch
there's
of time lapses.
It's probably going to be another art film like Joan of Arc's, but like with like a lot of like peas shooting out of the ground and
just like lots of time lapses of like
time lapses, just close ups of like hairy shells or whatever, and then like different colored like a nice like panning shot of like all these different colored shells or peas or whatever.
Well, what's the goal of his film? Like, what's he trying to communicate to you? Like, is he just trying to like make the audience appreciate the beauty of the natural beauty of the pea plant?
Sure, why not?
Like, what's his psychosis that he loves peas so
much? He's just trying to show like growth and decay of like how everything becomes eventually, you know?
Oh,
like everything starts
so it's
beautiful but then ends horribly. And
Gregor Mendel's movies about life and death.
Yeah.
Just like really, when you get down to it, the Gregor Mendel tale is about what every tale is about, life and death.
Yep.
The struggle to survive in a world that makes no sense. And yet...
But makes complete sense
and then
when you think about it.
And the struggle of an existence that is temporary. Or is it?
Or is it?
I like that. So yeah, the film fest, everyone gets so happy with the film fest that it ends with another riot.
Perfect.
We get to see Joan hit Sigmund Freud with this. Really, Joan starts the riot by hitting Sigmund Freud with that chair, right?
Is that what happened?
Sigmund Freud is going on and on about how he gets
how
it.
Super
and he's
obvious.
Like exposing her, and he starts chattering about how she loves Abe. She grabs a chair and smashes him with it.
Damn.
That starts the riot.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. For
and
sure.
We get we get to see the ending with Cinnamon's dinner with the shadowy figures, and he owns up to being friends with Mr. B. Mr. B's not just his butler, not just his assistant,
but his best friend.
But his best friend, a mustachioed robot in a sweater,
and he turns out to be the life of the party. And an excuse for the shadowy figures to not kill Scudworth. So
yeah,
it all works out.
We get a laugh track. Like, it becomes very sitcom-y all of a sudden when they get to there. Because there's a laugh track for no apparent reason.
Even when Scudworth comes home at the beginning of the episode, there's a little bit of like a crowd reaction to some of what he says. Yeah,
they kind
of
do a little bit of a live studio audience thing with Scudworth in this episode. It's pretty good.
That's
funny. I didn't even notose it earlier. And but yeah, of course the Board of Shadowy Figures gives him another chance, and that's kind of something that you don't maybe
frick.
One of the things that I didn't appreciate about the show before is that one of the aspects that we need to consider about Cinnamon's character is that he is under the constant threat of being murdered.
That's true. He's got it pretty rough.
He's like, the axe could fall any second of any day at any time.
He has to make sure these clones are like in top shape, that they're psychologically okay, and not get killed by the shadowy figures.
But he's apparently supposed to be making them into like military super people.
Yeah, what's going on?
And yet that is clearly not happening, no, and he's
surviving.
They're just
pining over each other.
So is this board of shadowy figures just as bumbling as anyone is?
Absolutely. I'm going to go with yes.
I think so.
They don't know what the hell's going on.
This is just like, this is just, you know what, man? The statement behind this show is really that no matter what sort of systems are in place, we're all just humans, man, and we're all flawed.
It doesn't matter. Something will happen.
Well, I guess it brings us to the inevitable question, Sean.
It does.
Who is the MVP of these two episodes of Clone High? I'm the host, so I get to put you on the spot first.
You're a piece of shit.
Yeah, so, you know, sometimes I take the bullet. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure if I ever have. Go ahead.
I'm going to go with Gandhi one more time.
You're just a Gandhi man.
I'm a Gandhi guy. I like the idea that Gandhi has ADD. He's a social outcast because of it. And he makes a wonderful movie with George Washington Carver in the next episode.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to go with Gandhi one more time.
He gets rejected. He gets accepted again. And then he fights for his right to make the movie he wants to make.
Yep.
Yeah. Even though George Washington Carver rewrites it.
Well, he rewrites his character because he can't say
it,
what.
To make it more himself. What's that you say?
What is that you say? So how about yourself, Brett?
I got to give it to...
Toots?
Joan. I'm giving it to Joan.
Giving it to Joan?
I got to give it to Joan. Well, actually, I'm not sure. About that. Because in the first episode, in episode 3, I'm giving it to JFK.
JFK?
I'm giving it to JFK. Yeah, that's it. I'm switching.
So,
I'm going to JFK.
Why JFK?
Because, well, in the ADD episode, he's just kind of funny. Like, with his... He subverts his character. He starts, you know, like, he's tagging along with Scudworth. He's getting emotional. We're seeing some different sides of JFK.
That's
even
true.
Though he gets rejected for it.
Yeah. He gets rejected by Cleo and Scudworth. That's harsh.
Yeah, yeah. So we get his little more humanity from JFK in that episode,
which I
appreciate.
He was shooting people with BB guns and stuff. I don't know if he was that humane about anything.
We see the growth of the character. Earlier in the episode, he's talking about wanting to go and shoot animals and throw dead gophers in the girls' locker room. But by the end of the episode, he's talking about his feelings.
That's
true. And he's growing as a character, or trying to, but then he gets rebuffed for it. So maybe he won't. Maybe he won't be able to go down that route. And then in the episode 4, JFK is just kind of being a badass dude, making out with the ladies and stuff, and
making
just,
a movie or something.
Just creating high comedy there with his just his. I just love that idea that we're gonna make a movie.
Yeah,
just let's say.
Okay, yeah. So take your top off.
Or if
what?
He's probably just
what
making a porno. Yeah, you're right. If he did make a movie, it was probably a porno. Maybe I don't want to make him the MVP, but
I
cast my vote. It's too late. The die,
it's been done.
The die is cast, dude, man, bro, amigo fella guy.
Yep.
And,
better believe it, bro.
We also forget that, you know, Scudworth, another thing we learned about him, that he did end up hosting at his own home, but he would have loved to have gone to the Olive Garden.
That's true. He loves the Olive Garden.
It's like, how did he describe it?
He described it as sitting at home eating Italian food with a stereotypical Italian family.
Yeah, something about sitting within, eating at the kitchen of a delightful stereotype or something. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
Olive Garden sucks. Unless Olive Garden wants to pay us.
Unless Olive Garden is free.
Unless Olive Garden, Garden, if Olive Garden wants us to tell people that Olive Garden is great, then I will do that.
Yeah.
I will also tell you that Olive Garden is paying me to tell you that they're great, but I will tell you that they're great.
They'll give us the breadsticks. They'll mail us breadsticks.
If I want unlimited orders of breadsticks mailed to me.
Yes.
From the Olive Garden.
I just want like a giant thing of soup.
You just want
preferably
soup.
Your chicken gnocchi soup because that's delicious.
Mm, yeah.
Actually, their kale and sausage soup is pretty good.
This is not an advertisement for Olive Garden.
No, Olive
Garden,
fuck off.
We're
going to
make John stop now. You know he's talking about soup at
so
Olive
Garden. So the
tour
of Italy is like $18.99.
Okay. So check us out next time on Little Shows
it has
Pod.
Lasagna, fettuccine.
At Little Shows Pod on Instagram and Twitter. LittleShowsPod.com. At Sean Stewman.
That's me.
At Brett Mad.
That's Brett.
It's the Little Shows That Couldn't.
Check it out.
It's the where everything's made up and the points don't matter.
Exactly.
Check us out.
Points
until next time. Clone high.